This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Since 9/11, more people have been killed by white supremacists and other far-right extremists in the United States than any other domestic extremist category. There are signs that something else is coming, maybe something really big, akin to the Oklahoma City bombing. How do white supremacist groups operate? What are their motivations? What's being done to stop them? What has happened in America to create an atmosphere where hate and white nationalism-fueled violence can be accepted? Call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you been the victim of a white nationalist hate, an attack? Call in. We want to hear your story, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by A.C. Thompson. He is a ProPublica reporter and a PBS Frontline correspondent featured in the November film Documenting Hate, New American Nazis. And Cheryl Drazen is the director of the Texas-Oklahoma region of the Anti-Defamation League. Welcome both of y'all. It's great to have you here this afternoon. A.C., these new American Nazis, what's their comparison to the old Nazis? Do they believe the same things?
Well, you know, I mean, the first thing I think that we want to make clear when we're talking about this is if we go back to the 80s and 90s, that was a high water mark for neo-Nazi organizing in the U.S. You go right up to 1995 and the Oklahoma City bombing, and the white power movement was really strong. You had militias, you had the Aryan Nations, you had white Aryan resistance, a skinhead group. You had all these groups out there working together. And that kind of petered out after 1995, where a lot of those people said, hey, you know, actually, maybe I don't want to kill children. Maybe I've changed my mind about making war on the government and the people of the United States of America. But the last couple of years have seen a real resurgence of this kind of activity and this kind of organizing. Now, I would say we're not back to that place that we were in the 80s and early and mid 90s. But we are definitely seeing a big, big surge of activity.
I remember Bo Gritz was a figure in that era, and he was frequently being quoted in the media and talking about the militia movement. And then after Oklahoma City happened, suddenly the feds redirected their attention and all that. Did it just go away? Did it just go underground, AC?
You know, I think there's a few things that happened. And I think, you know, the movement definitely lost energy. It lost members and recruits. I think some of the energy went into the anti-immigration movement, and that some things were done sort of under the cover of legitimate anti-immigration activism and policymaking. But I think a lot of it, that there was just less energy with these movements. When you see it, the real point where it starts to make a resurgence, 2008, the election of President Barack Obama. For white supremacists, they're very upset about an African-American president being in office. But then it gets supercharged during the candidacy of Donald Trump. And I think what sociologists have explained to me is that for social movements, when they see a person who may be in power, a person who's in power, who they believe is sympathetic and receptive to their views, that helps energize social movements. So if you think about a good example of this, it would be the civil rights movement in the 60s, where finally activists could see that there were politicians that might support the project of black liberation. In this case, you have the sort of grim mirror image of that, where you have white supremacists and neo-Nazis who see a president who they think, at least in some ways, is an ally, and that energizes their movement.
Yeah, and I'm wondering about the future. So we have an energized group. We'll get to all this, and there's a whole lot to cover, but this is something I don't want to gloss over or forget about. When there is going to be a dimming of the Trump presidency, will the groups that have been activated so far, they're not going to go quietly into the good night. They could possibly become triggered, AC?
Yeah, I think that at this point, the groups that are likely to act out aggressively, if there is impeachment, if there are criminal charges, if President Trump is somehow forced out of office, I think in that case, you're looking at sort of militia groups, patriot groups, oath keepers, three percenters, these sort of outfits that are on the far right, but are not necessarily white supremacist groups or Nazi groups.
Cheryl Drazen, director of the TexOMA, the Texas-Oklahoma region of the Anti-Defamation League. So Oklahoma City, obviously in that league. Do people remember that as with the connectivity of the of white supremacism or white nationalism?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Without a doubt, there we can trace some of what's going on. But as AC said, what we're looking at now is, I'm going to use the word modest revival, really buoyed by a rise of a generation of new neo-Nazi groups whose membership consisted primarily of young males with no real previous connection to generations of neo-Nazis. But we're seeing them again creating their own groups all around Texas right now.
And I've seen that Texas has been listed as one of the top recruiting states. Cheryl, do you see that?
Absolutely. In the data that we track, Texas college campuses were the most frequent targets of white supremacist propaganda since September of 2016. We had almost 100 incidents in the state, which is a lot since we've been tracking.
And when you track them, what does that mean?
That means it can be a flyer, a sticker, a banner, a poster somewhere on a college campus that is white supremacist propaganda. To give you kind of a baseline, in 2016-17, there were 165. For the 2017-18 academic year, we saw 287. So it's a pretty dramatic increase.
AC Thompson, you're looking online at the activity. What do you see?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that it's new groups, it's new sort of activists, many of whom don't have any sort of connection to previous generations or older leaders. And what you see is this whole flourishing of a white supremacist media ecosystem online. So blogs, websites, podcasts, social media channels, and that has all blossomed in the last couple of years. I think that now we're starting to see a downturn in that because a lot of these groups have now been deplatformed. They've been pushed off of Twitter. They've been pushed off of YouTube and Facebook. And so I think it seems to be, there seems to be some decrease in activity, but we definitely have seen a big rise in that sort of activity.
Listeners, have you seen white supremacist propaganda online or in person, flyers in your neighborhood, flyers on your college campus? Have you heard of people espouse these types of belief? What do you think is fueling this type of hate? We were talking about white supremacist groups, white nationalism, neo-Nazis. What's happening here in the United States? Why are we seeing the connection between these shootings that are happening at synagogues and other locations, their connectivity to the new American Nazi movement? When we come back, we're going to talk about the legacy of these groups here in the United States. And one of the biggest ones that we know of, and there's a lot of them out there. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about neo-Nazi groups, white supremacy groups that are online, and some of them are taking action. They're calling to take action. That means violence against people of color and in religious minorities in the United States. Have you noticed that? Have you seen recruitment flyers in your neighborhood or on college campus? What do you think we ought to be doing to stop this? Do you think that there is an atmosphere in the United States that has given a green light for many of these people to act out or come out of the shadows? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. So on our Facebook post, as we put this on Facebook, letting people know what we're going to cover, we got a response. Here's the Facebook comment. What incites someone to commit an act of domestic terrorism in the name of hate? That's easy. Whites are being cheated. Equality means oppression for white privilege. God has chosen them to set it right. They're on a religious crusade. So AC Thompson, you're the ProPublica reporter. You've been going deep into this world. Does that sort of sum up what a lot of people think?
You know, it's fascinating. When I talk to these young men, one thing that I hear a lot from them is they say, look, we are worried about becoming a minorities in this country. And we see how people of color have been treated in America, and it's not been good. And we're worried that we're going to get that same bad treatment. And so they sort of feel this existential threat to their way of life as white men, that things are changing and they can't control it. And so they have to fight against that sort of sweeping demographic change.
And so Cheryl Drazen at the Anti-Defamation League, what is on your radar? What are you noticing?
I'm noticing more and more disaffected young people, and that's the category I would put so many of these folks in, are attracted to some of the paramilitary activities, you know, things that call for race war now, and some of the packaging. Some of the packaging could be really attractive. For instance, Daily Stormer book clubs, which, you know, you can understand where someone looking to join a group or connect with an organization may be interested. The truth is, these are not open exchanges of ideas, but Andrew Aglin has actually toned down some of what was on the Daily Stormer, which was a really popular white supremacist website. But it's still, the book clubs still produce and distribute some of the most anti-Semitic propaganda that we see on campus and around the country. They often target Jewish institutions, but not always. They're vitriolically racist. And even Texas-based contributors will describe themselves as men on the ground, kind of emphasizing part of what AC was saying about real concern about demographic shifts they're seeing in their very own communities, and they're going very, very high tech. You know, they're developing podcasts. They are making their message so accessible for people in order to find it in any medium you can imagine.
We hear so much about the young generation being post-racist, and that they, in as a whole, generally not as racist as previous generations. Is that true? How do you see that reflected in what you're noticing, A.C. Thompson?
You know, I think in many ways that's true. You know, and I think in many ways the younger people in this country have wonderful values, that they're incredibly smart and incredibly compassionate and thoughtful. But, you know, I think that there's this sort of core of, as Cheryl said, disaffected young people, particularly young men, who feel like they're not fitting in to the current society. And I think part of what you get from them is this sort of online transgressiveness, right? Like liberal, and I mean that with a lowercase l, mores sort of dominate at this point. You know, it's widely unacceptable to be misogynistic. It's widely unacceptable to be homophobic or racist. And so online, these sort of young men who may be angry, may feel like they don't fit in, get a thrill out of being transgressive and doing all the sort of things that you're not supposed to do in current polite society. And I would say it's a point to make as well, is that this iteration of the movement, I think, is different than previous iterations in that earlier generations of the white power movement were very patriarchal. I think what you see a lot more with this movement is straight up misogyny and an anti-woman attitude. As well, there's a big emphasis on, you know, anti-LGBTQ thoughts, because there's been more acceptance and more success for the gay, lesbian, trans civil rights movement. So in some ways, you see these movements evolving over time. But at the core of it is this sort of disaffection, anger, and sort of resentment.
And then we have these mass shootings, like at the Pulse nightclub or at the Tree of Life at the synagogue. This attitude, these online propaganda postings that leads to violence, AC?
I think what I'm seeing, and I bet Cheryl has had similar observations, is that there's a core of this movement after the big rally in Charlottesville in 2017 that felt like, hey, protests are not getting where we want to go. Being out in public with banners and signs, that's not achieving the goal that we want. People came out of the white power movement came out of Charlottesville feeling that they were the victims, not Heather Heyer, who was killed, not the people who were injured, but that the white power movement was a victim because they didn't get to have their rally. And there was a core of that movement that said, hey, we're going underground. We're going to engage in guerrilla struggle, in acts of terror, in political violence, and we're not going to do these rallies anymore. And I think that has been a small but growing faction within the movement over the last year.
And when you say acts of terror, they mean at, directed at certain populations, or they want to bring the whole system down, AC?
Yeah, I sort of both, right? So
no one is safe.
No one is safe. And I think you know, you hear a lot about people wanting to direct their rage at houses of worship, whether those are Jewish synagogues, whether those are African-American churches, whether those are Sikh temples, whether those are mosques. You hear a lot about people wanting to direct their anger at gay, lesbian, and trans folks. And yeah, I would say that it is, we need to be vigilant, but not alarmed, but vigilant that there can be violence directed at basically anybody at this point.
And Cheryl Drazen at the Anti-Defamation League, do you have, want to add to that?
Well, I agree with everything that AC is saying. I think that Charlottesville particularly is a pivotal moment. If you look at the spectrum or, you know, historic white supremacy, we go from literally being under sheets and not identifying who we are to going behind to people sharing their hate from behind a computer screen. And Charlottesville was a new version. It was a public, literally in your face. We could see exactly who the people were who attended. We could identify them. And AC's right. There was tremendous frustration that the event was not as successful as it had been intended. And there is the shame and guilt factor of being labeled, whether it's a homophobe or an Islamophobe or an anti-Semite, among this group just doesn't exist. That those terms are being embraced. And it's a very, very different paradigm than what we're used to operating in.
So is there a direct line between Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, and people that have you've identified as part of this Adam Waffen, Brandon Russell?
Right. So the Adam Waffen division is a relatively new virulent neo-Nazi formation, probably about 50 young men involved in it at this point, mostly young men, with a big presence in Texas. And the thing about the Adam Waffen division is they look at Tim McVeigh and they say, that is our hero. They say, that is the guy that we want to emulate. They look at Dylan Roof, the young man who shot up the African-American church in Charleston, and they say, that is our hero. When they look at mass murderers and terrorists, those are the people that they want to emulate. So there's absolutely a straight line between factions of the current neo-Nazi movement and terrorists from years previous.
But when police went to Brandon Russell's house, didn't they find a framed picture of Timothy McVeigh?
More than that. So Brandon Russell is the founder of Adam Waffen, and he was arrested in 2017 in Tampa, Florida. And when the police went to his house, they found a framed photo of Tim McVeigh. But beyond that, they found the Turner Diaries, which was the white power sort of novel that inspired Tim McVeigh. They found bombs. They found the same sorts of explosives that Tim McVeigh used to blow up the Oklahoma City building. They found an assault rifle, shotguns, weapons, fuses, parts of pipe bombs, and a bunch of sort of different terror manuals like the Poor Man's James Bond and counterinsurgency books and so forth. All of that sort of material.
So, Cheryl Drazen, you're in the Texas-Oklahoma region for the Anti-Defamation League. The Oklahoma City bombing is akin to the attack, the 9/11 attack. Does it have the same level of resonance in, you know, that we don't want to have never again type of a thing?
Absolutely. You've expressed it absolutely beautifully. There is true concern about that being just as dramatic, kind of building on what AC was saying. This group is so focused on serial killers, really and truly. Charles Manson is a hero. There's even been references to Anders Breivik, Ted Kaczynski, and Timothy McVeigh as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit by this group, as they acknowledge the importance of their leadership and the central role that these killers play in who they are hoping to become and what they're rallying around. It's pretty shocking.
But when you look at the amount of resources that the United States has dedicated to prevent more terrorist attacks coming like 9/11, are we doing anything similar trying to prevent the types of attacks coming from white supremacists, A.C. Thompson? Or is the FBI really on this?
You know, there was a big shift in focus after 9/11, and I think there was a lot at all levels, local level, state level, federal level, a shift in resources away from tracking white supremacist extremists and towards tracking so-called Islamic jihadists and Islamic terrorists. And that has been a big, big shift. And I don't think that we've rebuilt that capacity to infiltrate these groups, to understand these groups, to track their activities, and to take them seriously. There are absolutely cases being made at all levels, and kudos to the prosecutors and detectives that are making them. But I think most people in law enforcement will tell you, no, we do not have the aptitude that we once had when it comes to the white power movement.
There was a report that was put out by the feds talking about that this is a true threat to the United States. And what was the reaction to that report, AC? And tell me more about who put out the report.
Yeah, so back in 2009, a Department of Homeland Security analyst named Daryl Johnson wrote a report. And he said, look, I'm concerned forecasting the threat environment for the years to come that we will see a resurgence of the white power movement. He said, look, there's a bunch of factors here. You have the election of the first African-American president, Barack Obama. You have a lot of soldiers returning from really difficult wars abroad. And at that time, they were coming back to a wrecked economy, a ruined economy. And you have a president who was pushing for tougher gun laws. And that is unpopular with a lot of people. And he said, look, these are going to be issues going forward. They're a lot like the sort of factors that helped to propel the movement in the 80s and 90s. But that was not a popular position. And Daryl was blasted as somebody who was trashing veterans and, you know,
the report was discredited on programs like Sean Hannity.
Right, oh, yeah, it was. But beyond that, you know, under a Democratic administration, it was retracted, rescinded, and Daryl Johnson's office within his unit, within Department of Homeland Security, was disbanded.
All right, we're talking about neo-Nazis and white supremacist groups here on The Source this afternoon. We'd like to see, what is your threat assessment? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Does more need to be done in order to track these individuals, monitor their activities before there is another Oklahoma City bombing attack or another attack on synagogues or mosques, all these types of people? This is, we're talking about public safety, national defense and security. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davis. Neo-Nazi ideology promotes hostility towards minorities and religious minorities, racial minorities, and in some cases, the revolutionary creation of a fascist political state. How big of a threat are white supremacist ideologists, and what incites someone to commit an act of domestic terrorism in the name of hate? We invite you to call into our conversation. Have you been a victim? Have you noticed a change in America with allowing this type of hate speech out there? 210-614-8980. Let's bring in Jeremy Schwartz. He's a reporter for the Austin American Statesman. His recent article is Inside Texas State's Year of Hate, Neo-Nazi Propaganda Fight. And Jeremy, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
So what happened with Texas State?
Well, Texas State between the election in November 2016 and the end of that fall semester in 2017, just over a year later, received more kind of what we've called propaganda attacks from white supremacists, the neo-Nazi groups, than any other university in the country. It was a year where it was an almost constant barrage of flyers, of posters, of banners that were hung at the school library, and it set in motion just a whole slew of changes at the school, and also really brought into question the administration's handling of that, and sort of how universities across the country handle these incidents.
Was this an act of a group that was upfront about this is who we are and this is what we do, or was this done in the shadows?
No, these were groups that were upfront about who they were and what they were about. There were four different groups at least that participated. The most active was a group called the Patriot Front, which is Texas-based, extremely active, not just in Texas but throughout the country. It has its roots in that Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. But you know, you would see propaganda aimed at white students, sort of take your country back type thing, lots of anti-immigrant feeling, you know, call the number for ICE, call ICE if you suspect somebody's here illegally. And it was, you know, in many ways a recruitment effort. Campuses for that time were seen as fertile ground, and Texas State in particular was seen as fertile ground for these groups.
Was there any acts of violence connected to all of this?
There were no overt acts of violence, luckily. There were incidents where you know, protesters' personal information and names were put on flyers, you know, phone numbers and home addresses by the Patriot Front, you know, basically inciting its followers to seek out people that were fighting them. There may not have been sort of a direct violent attack as a result, but there was definitely the sense of worry about safety on campus, especially among minority groups, and a sensation that the administration wasn't taking it seriously enough, sort of in an attempt that they saw as to sort of pretend it wasn't happening, to you know, sort of protect the reputation of the school before protecting the safety of, you know, of minority students. So there was sort of this lingering threat of violence, although we did find, we did a lengthy open records request with Texas State and got a bunch of emails from right around the election and found sort of independent of these, you know, white supremacist propaganda attacks, a number of incidents on campus of harassment, of threats, of death threats, you know, probably things that would be considered some type of assault. And sort of troublingly, these incidents received little public attention at the time and have not been classified as hate crimes by the school, even this now almost 2 years later.
210-614-8980 is the number to call to join the conversation. Natasha is on the line. Natasha, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I am a junior at Texas State, and I just want to say how disheartening it is that this is still happening. In the past semester alone, I think we got two emails from administration saying, you know, that we had had an incident on campus, but then there's nothing else said about it. Nothing seems to be really being done even now.
What would you like to see done?
I, the people that are doing this need to be barred from campus, for one. We have a massive police force on campus, and there's no reason they're still coming out and stickering up our campus on a regular basis.
Are they students? Do they have a right to do that?
They're taking down stickers from legitimate groups that are on campus. We have an ally group that put up stickers saying, you know, we stand with you, we stand behind positive messages. So we can't have the positive messages, but we're, you know, and they're getting in trouble for putting it up, the legitimate groups on campus. But yet we still have these hate-filled messages being spread all over our campus and making people feel very unsafe in a place where they should be safe to learn and get an education.
Natasha, thank you for your call. Cheryl Drazen, the director of the Texoma region of the Anti-Defamation League. Have you been tracking what's been going on in San Marcos at Texas State?
We absolutely have. And that really intersection of First Amendment and campus safety. In fact, Texas State was the site where the Texas legislature held its interim charges session this past January on First Amendment and campus safety, looking exactly at this particular issue. And ADL testified along with several other campus administrators about the real challenges that exist between how to keep students safe on campus, which is clearly the primary goal of every institution, and where in the marketplace of ideas, because the vast majority, and my familiarity with the Texas State incidents have been that these are people coming from off campus. It's a much harder thing to control than student speech. Is off campus speech coming to campus? Clearly, there are rules about what can be posted and where it can be posted, and some administrations have been much more effective with response times. But it's been a tremendous challenge all over the state. But as Jeremy says, probably the largest example is Texas State.
210-614-8980. David is on the line. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. What I actually wanted to say was, I'm not white. I am a Hispanic person. And what I find is, you hear about these hate groups and the younger people coming in and they feel disenfranchised or they don't feel like they fit in with the rest of society. And I almost want to say to them, welcome. Welcome to being a minority, like a Hispanic, like an African-American, like an Asian. That's what we have been feeling for hundreds of years. And so your little moment of, we're having a hard time with this, get over it. Let's try to make the entire place a better place, a much better place where everyone fits in. That's been the issue. We haven't gotten to the root of the problem. We haven't gotten to the root of saying, hey, everyone has to have a place because this is what this country is about. It's about democracy. It's about everyone taking their part and not sliding someone, not pushing someone down.
All right, David, thank you for the call. A.C. Thompson, back to you on the what's happening at the Texas State campus in San Marcos. Is that the playbook that a lot of groups follow?
You know, first I want to back up a little bit and make sure that people understand what's going on here. Patriot Front is a group that was earlier called Vanguard America. In Charlottesville, James Fields, who's now been convicted of murder for killing Heather Heyer, was marching with Vanguard America. The group changed its name after that act of terror because it was really bad publicity. I interviewed the leader of the group, Thomas Russo, in Charlottesville, and he said, these liberal snowflakes, they say that our speech is violent because we say these nasty things, but what about our violence? What are they going to say about that? So this is an explicitly violent group that has rebranded itself in recent years, or since 2017. And I think people should be clear about that. And I would say also, one of the key people in the San Marcos area, Eric Saylors, is a guy who seems to profess allegiance to the Hammerskins, neo-Nazi gang, has threatened to hit journalists with bricks and attack journalists. So this is a serious group. What they are doing on campus there is definitely a playbook, and it's a playbook that they're using, that a group called Identity Europa is using, and that other groups are using. And I would say right now they are one of the most active groups across the country.
All right, so we got to keep an eye on how things are developing in San Marcos at Texas State. Jeremy Schwartz is covering that. He is a reporter for the Austin American Statesman. His recent article is Inside Texas State's Year of Hate, Neo-Nazi Propaganda Fight. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us and giving us an update.
Thanks for having me, David.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of your comments. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. More on the waffles. They're waffles that believe in atoms. We're going to take a break. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about neo-Nazi groups in Texas across the country and their link to violence, white supremacist groups as well. 210-614-8980. Rachel is on the line. Rachel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Several years ago, I was at the Taco Bueno in San Marcos when a truckload of fraternity pledges pulled up. And as part of their hazing process, they were required to take the handicap signs from the parking spots, including where my car was. I called the police. The restaurant manager and all the employees were witnesses. They cooperated with the police. I contacted the police later. I contacted the university. I don't know if anything was ever done about that. And that, so this kind of bullying atmosphere, you know, persists, and I think it does contribute to this when you know, the university says, well, this will allow this one group to be bullied, and then they seem shocked when other people become bullied as well. It's a persistent problem.
Thank you so much for that call. A.C. Thompson, ProPublica reporter, PBS Frontline correspondent, the piece that you'll have online now, Documenting Hate, New American Nazis, and that whole documentary is available online for viewing. Is everyone fair game that these groups target? If people with disabilities, anyone that's out of the typical norm, is that what they go for?
I think that when you're looking at these groups, wide range of targets and a wide range of different ways to target people, and it may be harassment, it may be online abuse. It may be potential acts of violence. So, definitely a spectrum.
Do you think, AC, with the changing of the Congress, new leadership in Congress, that there may be more scrutiny for these types of groups? Certainly there are people who are in power in Congress and also in the White House. I'm thinking someone like Stephen Miller, who have trafficked in white supremacist connectivity, that's going to change? That they're going to have more hearings, more demand for action.
You know, we may see that. I would say the last 2 years have been pretty sad in terms of action at the congressional level on this front. There's been very little done, I would say, at the Justice Department and at Congress, at least publicly, over the last 2 years. So we may see more activity now with the new Congress. I think that's a strong possibility.
Cheryl Drazen at Anti-Defamation League. What do you think needs to happen to put these things, to prevent another Oklahoma City bombing?
It's a great question. And if I had the answer, I would definitely be sharing the recipe with everyone. I think it's multifaceted. I think there is a tremendous amount of information sharing that needs to happen, and law enforcement has gotten better. I think since 9/11, we have seen tremendous improvements in fusion centers and the sharing of intelligence between state, local, and national law enforcement agencies. I think that is going to be a key in order to be able to trace some of these people. Going back to Charlottesville, And the summer of August of 2017, we saw people traveling across the country and being able to really keep up with where those roughly 600 folks, where they all went back to, what they're moving to. As AC was talking about, so many of these organizations, form from a splinter organization or an offshoot of another group. It is it's a lot of moving pieces to keep track of and keep your eyes on. And the leadership, it's not a defined succession plan where you know that this is going to be the next person in a particular group or you know, to be leading. And some of the leadership is particularly young and incredibly not sophisticated and inexperienced. That's a harder challenge to be tracking than somebody who for 20 years has enjoyed the reins of an organization, and we have some insight as to how they're going to operate and how they're going to move.
AC Thompson, have you noticed a similarity between like ISIS recruitment videos and the videos that these neo-Nazis have posted?
All right, so full disclosure, I have never watched ISIS videos, but I keep talking to terrorism experts and experts on extremism, and they keep making that point to me. They say, look, these videos that groups like Adam Waffen are putting out remind me of ISIS or Al-Qaeda videos, and they have made that link, the sort of terrorism experts. So yeah, I think there's definitely a similarity from what I've been told.
So they're creating very slick videos showing these guys training, playing heroic music, what kind of ideology are they putting across in these videos?
So for a group like Adam Waffen, they have a whole sort of edgy guerrilla warfare sort of aesthetic, and their videos are people in camo training with assault rifles, that kind of stuff, like get ready for war, kill the Jews, kill people of color, that kind of thing. Then you have other groups like the Rise Above movement, which is a group whose members have recently been charged with federal crimes, a group based out of Southern California. And their videos were different. They were sort of this montage of handsome and very fit, buff young men engaging in boxing training and mixed martial arts training and running on the beach, exhorting young males to join this ascendant white nationalist movement.
And so, Cheryl Drazen, with the Anti-Defamation League, what are you seeing? Y'all are doing what, like an audit of the anti-Semitic activity incidents in Texas?
Absolutely. We've been doing an anti-Semitic audit annually. And from 2016 to 2017, we saw a 57% increase across the country. And Texas numbers followed. On school campuses, so I'm talking K through 12, not college campuses, what we've been talking about before, we saw a 94% increase in anti-Semitic incidents, and that can be harassment, vandalism, or assault among school children. So the numbers are astonishing. And while numbers clearly aren't yet in for 2018, based on what we're seeing in the Texas offices, we're going to be in a similar situation from the year before.
AC Thompson, as these people, I mean, they have to communicate somehow, and they're doing it online, and you're able to track it. Isn't law enforcement doing that same thing?
To some extent, and from what I can tell, not super aggressively. So it's important to note that what we've seen in the last couple of years is these groups using new technologies and new platforms to communicate. So a lot of these groups have been using a chat app that was developed for online gamers called Discord, and they have private chats that they engage in and use. Another app that we see people using is called Wire, which is an encrypted text messaging service where messages can disappear after a certain amount of time. So these are things that are not necessarily super easy for law enforcement to get access to. And basically, you need to go undercover to infiltrate these circles and then get into these conversations.
Well, that's what the FBI is. They've done that in the past. We know they've gone undercover and infiltrated other organizations, like Occupy. Are they doing that with these groups?
To some extent, but I do not think it is particularly robust, and I don't think it is particularly active. And I'll tell you why. When you look at a group like Adam Waffen, when they came on the national radar in the middle of 2017, that they came on the radar because their founder was arrested with a bunch of bombs making material and possibly plans to engage in terrorism. Another member had just murdered two people who actually he had a falling out with, who were members of the group. And the group's sort of whole online digital infrastructure was right there for the authorities to infiltrate and track down. They had seized their computers. They had seized their phones. They would have been able at that point to locate and identify all the members of the group. We did not think that that happened. And in the months following, the group continued to operate. It reconstituted itself, got new members, and people connected with the group committed allegedly two more murders. So that's the kind of thing that makes me concerned.
Now, there is a military connection with this group, AC?
Yeah, and that's the thing that you see with the Patriot Front that's so active there in San Marcos and San Antonio as well. There's several people in the Patriot Front who are former Marines or Army with a group like Adam Waffen. We know that at least seven people who are current or former military have been involved in the group, and that these are the kind of people that are passing on their skills, their techniques in combat to other members, saying this is how you engage in diversionary fire, for example. This is how you blow something up.
And Cheryl Drazen with the Anti-Defamation League, do you think that people need to be telling their representatives that they want some activity here, that the representative through that's a line of command that they can try to get some activity in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Representatives need to hear about the concerns coming from every single aspect of all of our communities, whether it is parents about their safety of their students in an elementary school or on a college campus, whether it is concern about what's going on, you know, in the pub down the street from you. Without a doubt, elevating voices and amplifying the discussion could do nothing but be helpful.
And so, like AC, when we hear about these shootings, like at Tree of Life, we have an individual who's in custody. He may be a lone wolf, but there is some connective tissue out there, and that needs to be checked up on really quick.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's coming from a movement that has an ideology that says go out and engage in these acts of terrorism. And so you need to look at the people who are part of that movement.
Needs to be investigated, needs to be followed up. There needs to be people on top of that. AC Thompson, ProPublica reporter, PBS Frontline correspondent. Their documentary, Documenting Hate, on New American Nazis. Also, Cheryl Drazen, director of the Texoma region of the Anti-Defamation League. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.